Language is a powerful tool in making politics. Various major historical incidents reveal the power of language, but yet it is also the daily political debate in which the role of language becomes obvious. Language is most conducive to advance one's own position, may it be by presenting well-chosen arguments or by strategically manipulating the audience. For now, let's however focus on the abusive side of language in politics and start by looking at some, luckily, still rather theoretical considerations. In his highly acknowledged novel 1984, George Orwell draws a very frightening picture of how people can be manipulated by political leaders. Orwell's novel evolves around the very forceful conception of a totalitarian state that controls every aspect of the people's lives. Hence, language is one of the many means to seize control over the people, but certainly a very powerful one. The political leaders embark on the project of reconstructing language in order to limit the people's ability to think. The language used so far is completely restructured, or more precisely, cut down to a very primitive level so as to prevent thought crime.
As we all know, biological and social stimulation of the family leads to private reflection outside party needs and the establishment of unorthodox loyalties which can only lead to thought crime.
Thought crime, that is thinking something that goes against the proclaimed party doctrine. So, any form of mental freedom, self-expression and individuality is to be oppressed by the regime. Any shades of meaning are removed from the language so that only basic concepts remain that reinforce the dominance of the state. Language is reduced to something automatic and very simple, something completely unconscious. While Orwell's conception of a totalitarian state making up a completely new language in order to control the people's thoughts and feelings might to many sound a bit too far-fetched, Hitler and his fascist Nazi party actually succeeded in controlling the public discourse and perception. They took recourse to heavily polarizing propaganda. Hence, they also made use of language to achieve their political goals. Hitler, who was certainly rhetorically gifted, lifted propaganda to a new and often perverse level. He was fully aware of the value of propaganda and created a sole ministry for that purpose led by Joseph Goebbels. Quite quickly, he managed to drag a huge majority of people into believing in his insane racist doctrine, into his heroic conception of the German state and the alleged historic injustices it underwent. He succeeded in creating a feeling of unity among the Germans, in suppressing any critical voices, and in making the Nazi state omnipresent.
Die Nationalsozialistische Partei ist der Staat geworden, was du und deinen Vätern ererbt hast, erwirb es, um es zu besitzen.
How perverted the whole propaganda was and how much it had limited the people's ability to reflect on what they were told by the Nazis can be quite vividly witnessed when listening to Joseph Goebbels' most famous speech delivered in front of a huge and carefully selected audience at the Berlin Sport Palace on 18th February 1943. In this speech, he calls for a total war. A total war at a time when the tide of the war had already turned against Germany. This speech pays tribute to how there was virtually no promising chance of standing up against the Nazis. But let's just take one last look at how language is used in today's international political discourse. What role does it play when referring to war or warlike situations? Does war still exist? This question seems justified given the very evasive language used by many political leaders since the end of the Cold War. How do we perceive of armed conflicts today? Are the politicians trying to make us believe that there is no longer any clear notion of war? The NATO bombing of Serbia in 1999, carried out without a UN Security Council mandate, was labeled a humanitarian intervention. Whether it can justifiably be called like this remains disputed until today. Still, there have since been many more incidents of foreign powers intervening in other states for apparently humanitarian causes. They were, strictly speaking, carried out in violation of international law, but there is certainly a trade-off as to whether humanitarian interventions should be regarded as justified on moral grounds. In recent years, a lot of criticism has pointed in the direction that so-called humanitarian interventions are being abused to veil Western imperial ambitions. Without any doubt, a military campaign can hardly ever be strictly humanitarian. But still, one has to take into consideration that humanitarian interventions aim at preventing greater harm. Next to the Kosovo intervention, those in Mali, Libya, and Rwanda are probably the ones best known of. Of course, Western policymakers should be careful in how they address humanitarian catastrophes like these. But that doesn't mean that interventions are solely motivated by imperialist motives. Humanitarian interventions should certainly be evaluated on the basis of critical thinking. Undoubtedly, the concept of war has changed as conflicts have become more internal, asymmetric, and segmented. This should, however, not disguise the fact that there's equally fighting going on, even if not in the classical sense, and that many people die. Policymakers should thus be cautious in what language they use when referring to conflicts and how they react to them. Juliane Drechselgrau for Radio UPF.